I am honored to see you.
Well, thanks.
Thank you for taking the time to do this. I've been looking at your schedule and seeing what all you're putting out. Man, you've got a lot of things going on.
I just like making stuff with my
Yeah,
friends.
that's it's evident. So. Well, there you are, and welcome to Redemption's Table. I'm Robert Barge, your host. And we've just listened to the song, The Love of Jesus, by today's special guest, Andrew Osinga. Now, I've known of Andrew for 9 to 10 years now. I first heard him in concert with Andrew Peterson's Behold the Lamb of God tour that happens every year during Advent. And I first met Andrew Osinga earlier this year at a retreat I was attending. I walked up to him and I asked, "How do you feel about Jesus's Beatitudes?" His ecstatic response led to an on-the-spot invitation to come to the table. Andrew is a prolific creator. He's a singer-songwriter who has released 3 albums that I know of within the last year. He's an indie artist, major label band member, record producer, guitar player, label executive, and a Nashville veteran in almost all areas of the music business. He's also the host of one of my top 10 favorite podcasts, The Pivot, which returns sometime next week after a 5-year hiatus. And he has a brand new book coming out tomorrow, October 7th, entitled How to Remember: Forgotten Pathways to an Authentic Faith. Andrew and I recorded this conversation early in September, and immediately I was drawn in because we were talking about subjects that we both are passionate about, including Jesus' Beatitudes, the music of Rich Mullins, and podcasts, among other things. So thanks for joining us. I believe Jesus is about to lead you to some fresh discoveries through this conversation. So let's get started. Welcome to Redemption's Table, Andrew Osinga. Wow, it's good to see you.
You too. You too.
We first met back in January at the Habit Winter Writers Retreat.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I came up to you and talked to you. You were there as a guest of Jonathan Rogers on the Habit podcast.
That's
right. And afterwards, I walked up and I asked you a couple of questions. And but I know one of the questions I asked was, how do you feel about the Beatitudes? And you lit up. Yeah, that question resonated with you.
I did, yeah.
So that's, that's why I invited you. I mean, I would have invited you maybe anyway, but that's an opening question for me because I ask it of a lot of people and it doesn't always resonate or, you know, so I want to talk to you about that, but also just in the way of introduction, you've got a lot going on right now. You have released a couple of albums, actually 3 within the last year. You have Headwaters that came out in October 24, the Anchors Hymn Project.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
In March 25. And you just released back in August a collection of acoustic songs.
Yeah.
Plus, you have a book coming out in October.
Yeah.
And so, wow. I don't know where to start.
That's how I feel every morning when I wake up. What am I supposed to be doing today? Yeah.
Let's talk about the book. That's coming.
Sure.
Will be released on October the 7th.
It will. Yeah.
A lot of people say, give me the elevator pitch. We're in the gift shop at the Grand Canyon, and we're in there in the bookstore. And we're going to just, whatever time it takes for us to walk out of that bookstore and walk out and suddenly, whoa, there's the Grand Canyon. Introduce your book. What's it about?
Literally, I use that image in the book. The gift store of the Grand Canyon is like the main image of the book. That's wild that you just used that.
Well, I did read your first, the
sample you did. Chapters. Okay. Yeah, where did you get that? Okay. Yeah, sorry, that totally threw me. I thought you just pulled that metaphor out of the air. I was like, wow, that's crazy. The idea is that I think in the American church, in America in general, I think we kind of communicate via product. I think we communicate our news via product. I think we communicate our education via product. I think we communicate as a church via product. It's just kind of how our world works. And so, a lot of the Christian life does not make for a good product. And so there are a lot of aspects of following Jesus that we kind of don't talk about a lot in the modern church because it doesn't sell well. It doesn't work on the radio. It doesn't sell books. It doesn't sell t-shirts. And so we just aren't that familiar with it. And in church history, there are a lot of songs, prayers, and practices that we're just unfamiliar with. And I've just had the experience the last decade or so of kind of tripping and falling into rooms, friendships, experiences where I've encountered some of these old traditions, and they're not foreign to everybody, but they're foreign to a lot of modern evangelicals, which I have had been. And I honestly would may have left the church had I not found these older traditions. They really saved my faith, and in a lot of ways have been saving my life and have reintroduced me to Jesus in a new way. And I wanted to show people what I found. And the idea was the image of the gift shop in the Grand Canyon was it felt like in a lot of ways I'd been living in a gift shop and didn't realize that I had I just opened the door, the Grand Canyon was there the whole time. So that's what the book's about.
Okay. Have you been at on the South Rim?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I read that, I think the sample of your book that I read, there was like three chapters, and when I read that, I went there. There's
Huh.
one of my favorite bookstores, gift shops is right there on the rim, on the South Rim, and literally you're in that gift shop and you can get caught up in all the stuff.
Yeah.
And you just walk right out of one of their doors, and it's like within 10 steps, you're there
Isn't
seeing
it amazing?
it.
It's breath, and they've got that model, that big diorama of the Grand Canyon in that gift store, if it's the one I'm thinking of. And you can look at that for an hour because it's fascinating. And it can almost make you think, wow, just seeing this was worth coming here. But then you step outside and you go, never mind. That was nothing compared to what God made out here. Yeah. And some of those, some of the songs that the church has historically sung are things about justice and things about loving your enemy and learning to be quiet and giving, evangelism. We don't sing about any of that stuff in the modern church. We pretty much sing about God being good, God loving us, and how that makes us feel. And those are all good things. It's not that those aren't good things. It's just that we're reading a tiny little paperback when there's a whole bookshelf to explore. So, and the same with practices and prayers.
Well, I'm excited about your book. I already pre-ordered it.
No, thank you,
Yeah,
Robert.
yeah,
That's
yeah,
amazing.
yeah. I love the book cover. I
Dude,
just
isn't it? I had nothing to do with it.
yeah.
They sent me a bunch of different options, and there was that. And I was like, what is this? That's amazing.
I didn't notice till today when I first saw it back several months ago. I was like, well, I love that cover. I love to hike, do a lot of hiking. I'm going off a couple of weeks to Olympic National Park for a vacation. But I've been in a lot of the national parks. And when I saw the cover, I
Awesome.
was like, I love the cover.
Thank you.
And I didn't notice till today, this morning, that cover is a composite of real stone, but also artistry. So I thought that was pretty
It's
cool.
really cool. Yeah, the longer you look at it, the cooler it is. Yeah.
It doesn't take much, Andrew, to trip my mind. I mean, I was like, whoa, and I loved you the dedication to the book,
Oh, thank
to
you.
your daughters. May whatever paths God sets before you lead you to beautiful places. And the reason I love that is that's how I first knew who you were, 2019, Behold the Lamb of God tour, Birmingham, Alabama, and you sang that night, Beautiful Places. And I was like, whoa. So I want to go to chapter one of your book.
Oh, sure.
There's a quote there that I read, and it says, "The ways of Jesus a disciple must eventually learn involve quite a lot of nuance, beauty, and contemplation."
Yeah.
Unpack that a little. I know you do in that chapter, but just say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, well, the I think I was raised as a youth group kid in a fundamentalist church, and there were a lot of great things about that, to be honest. There was a season in my life where I had tried to throw away a lot of that. I've had to reassemble a lot of those pieces. You know, you have to sometimes you have to take apart what you were handed to go, all right, what of this do I need to keep and what do I need to get rid of? And the older I get, the more I kind of keep realizing, oh wait, actually maybe I didn't need to throw away some of that. By no means a fundamentalist, but there were more little shards that I could keep. I keep finding. But youth group kids, by I think we are taught a lot of slogans, you know, and I think and at that age, that's kind of how you process information. You know, we learn big statements and we short sentences, you know, no fear, just do it. You know, that's kind of that's at that age, that's kind of how we process things and that's how we engage the world. But as we grow and as we mature, as humans and as believers, we have to slow down. We have to think about things. We make mistakes and we have to go, why did I do that? How do I fix this? How do I fix me? What's wrong? How do I care for this other person? How do I care for the world? And you just have to stop and think. You learn that you have to spend time in prayer and you just can't rush that. You have to slow down. And that takes contemplation, that takes nuance. And the idea of the reason I use the word nuance is that's almost another word of saying wisdom, is we have to engage the world with wisdom, which doesn't just mean knowing stuff. It means thinking about how to engage the world in the way that you use the information you know, and what you know about other people, and how do you engage with kindness to bring about the best outcome for everybody. And sometimes that is really delicate. And the older you get, the more delicate you realize almost every situation is. In your own heart and everything around you. And the way of a believer is walking more and more delicately, even when you have to be aggressive and defensive, which sometimes we have to be. It doesn't mean we can't be those things. Sometimes we have to be, but I think we just are told sometimes we just have to be these sloganeering people. And I just don't see that in the Bible. I see nuance.
Jesus, the more you look at the things he said and the things he did, I've never gotten used to them. They continually blow me away, knock me
Continually
off balance.
surprising. Like he never answers a question straight. And no matter how many times you read these stories that, you know, I've been reading them for 40 years, and you're still like, oh, wait, yeah. Why did he say that? What is he talking about? And you have to think about it.
That one statement from the first chapter, it reminded me of the Beatitudes. When I kind of got drawn into the Beatitudes about 20 years ago. Always know they're there. And a lot of times I think we look at it like, oh, this is the preamble to the Sermon on the Mount. And it's like, actually, it's the sermon. And then the rest of it unpacks those Beatitudes. But I want to share your take on the Beatitudes. Like I say, your face lit up when I said, tell me, what do you feel about the Beatitudes? It's like, whoa.
Well, to me, anybody who's wanting to talk about the Beatitudes is somebody that I want to have a conversation with. It just tells me, oh, we're reading the Gospels in the you're engaging with the Gospels in a real way. Like, because those statements are asking they are asking you to follow Jesus unequivocally. And you have to change who you are. Jesus accepts us as we are, but those are about following Jesus. And they're also about how he accepts us as we are. So they're wild. They are just ninja moves. So the reason I think I don't know, how do I want to say this? 3 years ago, I felt like I knew, I just had this feeling like I talk about the Bible all the time. I work in Christian music. I'm surrounded by this stuff. I need to spend more time with the words of Jesus. And so for a summer, and it was particularly a summer, my family and I took a big trip out west. I kind of had a little sabbatical, mm-hmm. which I'd never had before. And we did like a 5-week trip, just big Western loop trip. And out west, it was awesome. And I read the Sermon on the Mount, the whole like Matthew 5-7 every day for like 4 months. And I brought a stack of Bibles of different translations. So I'd sort of cycle through all different translations, like, you know, the NIV and the ESV and those kinds of things, but also like David Bentley Hart's and N.T. Wright's and The Message, you know, so just to see the different ways people would translate those words. And it was just transformational. And you can't watch the news the same way. You can't read the rest of the Bible the same way.
Yeah.
So I don't know, like I'm not somebody who reads the Bible and comes away with 5 points, you know, bullet points, or, you know, I don't have acronyms out of it. Like, well, here's my 3 T's. I just know I talk to my kids differently and I talk to people around me differently. And I think I voted differently after that summer.
Yeah.
They changed how I lived.
Yeah. I loved how you said that's how you follow Jesus. That's following Jesus, because yeah, that's exactly what I have seen in that. It's like, it's his rhythm. This is his cadence. Yeah. Those 8 Beatitudes, and it's like his footsteps. And, or I thought, well, it's like when Jesus said, you know, take my yoke upon you. It's his yoke. I mean, it's like a infinity cycle. It's just, and you know, I keep stepping into that river and asking myself, you know, have I been merciful? Am I living dependently? Mm. All those things. It keeps going back to that.
I wrote this piece on my Substack maybe a month ago, and this is not to be, I don't mean this to get into politics. I really don't. But there's this move. Some of these states are making these moves to like put the Ten Commandments up in schools and put them up in different places. Yeah. And you know, the separation of church and state, clearly that's not, you know, that's against that rule. But
right.
To me, if you really want to hang something on the wall to tell people about Jesus, you don't hang the Ten Commandments.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? The Ten Commandments are to say, we're in control. We tell you what to do. That's a power move.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's people who are just, that's about domination. That's what that move is.
Yeah.
Because if you really are making that move to change people's hearts, you're hanging up a poster of the Beatitudes.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
And that's just what it struck me. I used to have on that wall for about 10 years hung a painting that my wife, now it's hanging over here, I can see it, but you can't. My wife made for me that is the Beatitudes, because we had our, the pastor who married us, he did our wedding sermon based on the Beatitudes. We had him, we asked him if he would do that for us.
Wow.
And that was before we knew what, I didn't know what I was talking about. I just had read it and thought it was cool.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much that big of a part that would shape my life.
Yeah.
That was a terrible sentence, the way I just put that together grammatically. I just want everyone to know I recognize how badly constructed that sentence was. but you know, I'm just saying it takes up the same real estate as as a poster of the Ten Commandments. But because, you know, it is because the Ten Commandments is about don't do this.
Yeah.
Don't do this. And it's about sort of a top-down power. And the Beatitudes is about giving up your power. It's about those who have the least have the most.
Yeah.
You know, and it's about realizing. I mean, that's the thing is I can just picture if that's hanging in a classroom of immigrants and poor people and oppressed people, that how much hope that would give them,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. How much dignity that would give them. Like mm-hmm. you'd cause a revolution if you hung the Beatitudes among that group of people.
Yeah.
Right. Because you're telling them you matter.
Yeah.
God cares about you. God sees you.
Yeah.
So I get why they wouldn't want that hung up.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you know, you said earlier, I blew your mind with the Grand Canyon statement, and I had a little foreknowledge of your book. You just blew my mind with what you just said. I've written a couple of books, but the one of them was back in 2007, and it's called The Sojourn, and it was self-published. But one of the chapters I was talking about at the time, the popular movement to put the Ten Commandments up in a courthouse in the state where I'm originally from. And I just said, I'm not a fan of that. What we need to put on the courthouse wall is the Sermon on the Mount. So
Robert, we're friends. Look at us.
Yes, we are. And I'll send you the book. So you go, wow.
Please.
You know, so, yeah. So, and I know you haven't read it because I don't think there's might like be 1,000 copies. I've got 1,500 up in my attic. So,
well, I got a garage full of CDs if you want some. Yeah.
Oh, so that just, wow. That just got me. And, you know, you mentioned, if you go back to the last podcast I just put out, it's called Resistance. And I'm not the podcast, you know, 175 episodes now. It has not been political in any way. And but because of my job, I took on a full-time position. It had been part-time for the last couple of years, and I took it on this year. And so it's been really hard for me to do a lot of episodes compared to earlier years.
Sure.
But this one just kept sitting with me for the last 4 months. And I wrote half of it and I threw it away, wrote half of it. And I saved it on my computer. And, but the resistance is based on the seventh beatitude. Blessed are the peacemakers, for, you know, they should be called the children of God. And the idea in that is that really the only way we fight is that we fight in such a way that nobody's going to like the way we fight, because you're fighting as a peacemaker, not a peace lover, but you're trying to put two sides together. You're not choosing a side. You're right there in the middle of it in a positive way. You're actually in Jesus's footsteps, balancing on the nail on the cross. As far as we're bringing, you know, bringing two sides together, God to man, and also our fellow man with each other. And so, you know, that's resistance, that we're being peacemakers, not peace lovers, not peacekeepers. And so, and you talked about it changing, you know, the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount changed everything. Same for me.
You know, what's beautiful about that is I was just, the idea of the peacemakers being the children of God is, and I wish I'd made this connection earlier. I would have put it in my book. I didn't, just making it right now as you said that. But that Christ, you know, Christ makes peace for us, right? By dying on the cross for us, as you just said. And Christ is the child of God, you know, the heaven-born Prince of Peace. He's a child of God.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ninja moves.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, and when you're redemptive, you bringing, you know, people together. That's when we're like that. That's that resembles the kind of children that God would have.
Yeah.
And so yeah, we need to talk more. So that's good. That's good.
I love it.
I know it's maybe an odd question. Do you have a favorite beatitude? Is there one? I mean, none of them are easy. They're all extremely challenging. But is there one that's like, I really, probably not a good question.
I never thought about it that way. No, I'm looking at them. I mean, I want to be pure in heart and see God, but I'm not. That's the one that always troubles me the most.
Yeah.
That's the one where I say that's the one where I struggle to find myself.
Yeah.
All the others I there's a part of me or I can go, oh, there's a part of me that's meek. Yeah. You know, there's a part of me that there's a lot of me that mourns. There's a big part of me that mourns. And so I identify a lot with that. I always struggle with the pure in heart. Cause I'm like, I am not that.
Yeah.
And I desperately want to see God.
Yeah.
And that's always where I just have to say, only by the grace of God am I pure in any way.
But
I would say the one I get the most comfort from is the one is you know, the one about being, you know, those who mourn being comforted.
Yeah.
But pure in heart, seeing God is the one that's most challenging.
Yeah.
Which probably means it's the one that I need to spend more time thinking about, writing about.
Yeah. I like the philosopher Soren Kierkegaard, and his famous quote based off of that is, to be pure in heart is to will one will. And to focus on one thing. It was kind of the originator when Rich Mullins wrote My One Thing. Because they knew, even in the lyrics of that song, save me from these things that might distract me. Please take them away and purify my heart. And ever since that, I'm like, you know, yeah, this is because you're right. When talking about the armor of God, the breastplate of righteousness, I know whose righteousness is covering us. It's not mine, because I don't have any. You know, it's always His. We bring no righteousness to the table.
Yeah.
It's always Him. And I'm just like, I want to wear this armor and I want to grow into that, but I'm so far away from growing into that. I won't be there when I die.
No, is this podcast, is it all about the Sermon on the Mount and the Beatitudes?
It's not. The way it originally started back in 2019, the concept was to actually be you and I to be sitting at a restaurant, sharing a meal together. And at the end of the meal, record the conversation there at the restaurant.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah. The sober Mesa after dinner conversation with all the ambiance going on. And that worked great until a little thing called 2020 happened. And,
something happened. Yeah.
So it's harder to get it's amazing to me. It's harder to get a conversation now than it was before COVID. I still get them, but it just takes a little, you know.
I mean, to get people to come on the show, or?
Well, that, or, you know, just, I think we've just gotten super busy as a whole, everybody.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was the original idea. And I started out with a question early on, about letting people tell me their redemption story. But I didn't hold to that. Like the way you close the pivot,
Oh, go do something awesome.
go do something awesome.
Yeah.
So, and I'm hoping the pivot's coming back out.
It is. It
That's
is.
good to
We're going to
hear.
launch it in a couple weeks.
Really? Are you
Yeah.
serious? Oh my goodness.
I've been recording them like mad.
Oh
Just
man.
stockpiling them so we can come back.
Wow. Well, I'm going back and re-listening, and that came out. The pivot came out about the same time that JJ and Dave Heller did. My mind just went blank.
Oh, their podcast?
Their podcast.
Yeah, that was, man, I did theirs. That one took a lot of work.
The whole rewinding their
Yeah,
story
like
and
I had
bringing
to
it
do
back.
like a day's worth of homework just to be on their podcast.
Well, you have an excellent podcast, and I've thoroughly enjoyed it, and I'm excited
You
to
are
know.
kind.
I'm serious. The idea of the pivots in our lives, because they're now I've got them in mind. I will tell you, I thought about what's my pivot points. I pivot like a sloth. I mean, I just don't pivot fast.
Well, we all, I remember when I started I started the podcast with the idea was to just kind of talk to people about like a failure in their life, because I just had a giant one. I'd lost a job. I had a sort of public facing record company job. I had this big boy, cool office, way in over my head, did not deserve the job, failed at it miserably, got axed. And it was just, at least in our community, it was a just very public failure. And I just had my tail between my legs, you know, and oh, it was embarrassing. And it was wild because all of a sudden I was having all these friends reach out, taking me to lunch, taking me to coffee, let's go for a walk. And everybody was telling me their stories of when something like that had happened to them. And people were being, well, A, I had a there was a group of people who all of a sudden didn't talk to me at all because I realized they were only talking to me because I had the cool office. And there were other people who all of a sudden were way nicer to me because I had, didn't have because I had had some big mess up, you know, and they were fun, they were just being great people and telling me these great stories. And I was like, oh, why couldn't we have this conversation last week? Why did I have to screw up so bad for us to be normal people with each other? So I started driving around and asking people, can you just tell your story into this microphone? And then I remember I had a friend who was also a podcaster, and she said really early on, aren't you worried you're going to run out of people? And I was like, I don't think so, man. And you know, I did 100 episodes and only quit because I had other stuff I wanted to do. Like, there's everybody has failures and just has changes, just has other th things they just, well, I thought I was going to do this. I ended up doing this. I thought I was going to do this. And then this thing happened. That, you know, it gets sick. Somebody moves. Somebody, you change. Some of the things just change. We all deal with change nonstop. So this time when I come back, I'm still gonna kind of walk through some of those life changes, but I'm also gonna ask, I'm gonna start with a question, at least for a little while, and just ask people, what is something you've changed your mind about? And start there. Just
I like
because I'm
that.
curious. Right now, I just feel like we're in this age of where everybody just has to be so dead set about everything. And I'm just like, I don't think people are like
No,
that.
no.
I've never been like that,
Yeah.
you know? And I just want us to, can we have human conversations where we can say, well, I thought this for a while and then this happened and now I don't think I think that anymore. I think that's going to be really helpful for me to hear those stories. And I think other people might want to hear that too. So, anyway.
Maybe in my or
Thanks for letting me ramble about that.
No, you're welcome. I mean, I'm excited to hear about that. Yeah, I think in our younger days, I'm speaking for myself, you know, there was something about flipping tables. And it's interesting. I don't know, the 40, 50 years in church, the thing that most people want to talk about is, well, even Jesus got angry. And then they talk about flipping the tables. Actually, he did it twice, not once, but twice. And I've got where I've heard it so many times, I just say, yeah, and I trust his anger. I don't trust my anger, and I don't trust your anger. And it's just like,
that's good, Robert.
I just don't. And that whole idea of why don't we pivot on that instead of flipping tables, thinking about doing that? Why don't we set tables and actually have a conversation with somebody that we totally are not on the same page with? And just listen to their story. My life has just seemed like one pivot. I could not have predicted any of this. Which in itself is the measure of an adventure. So,
yeah, I thought I was going to be an English teacher in
really?
Illinois. Really? I'm a guitar player in Tennessee.
Wow. Yeah. I thought I was going to be a youth minister all my life. And I did it for a long time. Right now I am a fatherhood coach in a women's pregnancy center in Montgomery, Alabama. Did not see that coming.
Yeah, those are not the same thing.
No, yeah, it's just, and it was like when I was asked, I didn't even know the job. I was there to speak in schools to talk to students about abstinence in the middle schools in inner city Montgomery.
Wow.
And obviously I didn't get that job. And I look back now and goes, that's probably good I didn't get that job. But when I was asked, have you ever thought about working with fathers? And I was like, no. That's probably the inflection I had in my voice when no, it never even crossed my mind. Anyway.
Wow.
And something you said a minute ago about, you know, you had that moment in your life, like, you know, where some friends pulled back and others came forward. Again, I caught a line in one of your songs this morning. I was driving into work and driving back. The line was something to the effect of, you want to go out in the, you want to get away, go out in the woods, walk in the dirt so you don't put your foot in your mouth. And that just single line, probably out of context of the rest of the song, I was like, identify with that line, you know, get out there. And yeah, you know, cause I feel like my foot is always trying to find its way into my mouth. So try not to.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. Well, yeah. That line's like meant to be kind of a joke that, you know, it's like, yeah, I want to go just get out into the woods. Also, I want to go get in the woods so I can stop making a fool of myself because I just can't seem to stop.
Yeah.
I feel both compulsions sometimes. Yeah. Like I want to go hide, you know. I also just love going out into the woods.
I do too.
But sometimes I just got to go. Sometimes you feel like you just want to hide.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm not sure which I'm doing. And I need to examine that. But yeah, I wrote that song for my daughters because I've got three daughters. And so I was on the road. I was on tour and I just had a series of conversations with my girls, like back to back after school. And they'd all just had hard days at school. And kids are just mean. Mm-hmm. And they just had like back to back, my girls had just had hard days. And I just wrote it for them. Like, yeah, sometimes you just feel that way. And they'd all had those kinds of days where you just want to go you just want to go eat lunch in the bathroom, you know? Yeah. Like, gosh, I've felt that way.
Yeah.
It's okay. You're okay. It's not always going to be that way, but it is that way. Yeah. I'm not going to tell you it's not that way.
Yeah.
But
good song.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And Taylor Lenhart, man, sings on that song. It makes everything sound better.
Well, I do want to ask you one more question and we'll kind of bring things in for a landing.
Sure,
this is a curiosity question on my part. I know that the Ragamuffin album was live. I figured you were working on that or a part of that this summer as that's getting ready for launch sometime in the not too distant future.
Yeah, I got the poster. I saw the poster right there.
And I didn't know if that was I know that's the cover for the Rich's album.
So that's the poster for the show that we played, which was, does it have a 2017 we played that
Okay.
show.
Okay.
And do you know the story of it? So we that was like the 20th anniversary of Rich's death.
Yeah.
Not to like the day or anything, but roughly that time. And Andrew gathered us, which was just wonderful, to play this show where we did the whole Liturgy, Legacy, and Ragamuffin band album straight through note for note, which we all just adore that record. And that's a complicated record. That's the hardest I've ever worked to play one show in my life as a guitar player, because that's a bunch of great guitar players just messing around. So they're not playing parts, they're just kind of playing random stuff. So you're not even learning parts, you're learning their little throwaway licks, which is way harder to learn, because you're like, because they didn't think about it. So now you have to figure out what did they just throw away. That's so much harder to learn. It was so fun, so fun. And then we all took turns singing the songs. So we did that for the second half of the show. And the first half of the show, we just all sang our favorite other Rich song and just kind of took turns singing them, and did them with the full band. And it was like a 3 hour show. So great. And we did it at the Ryman Auditorium, because we've just done our Christmas show there for so many years that they are sort of like, anytime you guys want to do anything, you can do anything, which is crazy. And it was a sold out show, and we had a lot of the people who played on the original record and who worked
Wow.
with Rich, like his close friends and people on his team. The guy who produced all his records was there, and he even gave us like his handwritten scores that he'd written for a lot of the string players. Like, he gave us his charts, helped us find some like just extra little info that we needed to pull it off. It was really awesome. Anyway, we didn't film it. We didn't think we recorded it. And then it turns out our sound guy, Harold, who is just an amazing sound guy, one of my closest friends. He ran sound for Cademan's Call, which is a band I was in for a long time. Stephen Chris Chapman, who I played with for a long time, Matt Maher, who I played with, and Andrew Peterson. So we think we've done 800 or 900 shows together.
Wow.
I think there's one other artist we played a bunch with together. I can't remember. Anyway, he's got the soundboard that will record multi-tracks, like a Pro Tool session, like in each individual track to a hard drive. And he's always got it set up just on the base. He's got it set up so that when he gets to the next city, he can, we don't have to sound check as much. So he can mix last night's show in the new room. And so we'll hear him, we'll walk around in the new venue, and we'll hear him just like solo up the snare drum or my guitar part from what I played last night in the new room. Just saves everybody time, saves him time. And so he does that every
Okay.
night. He records the shows. So he did that with the Rich Mullins show and forgot about it.
Wow.
And then, like 3 or 4 or 5 years later, he texts Ben Shive, maybe Ben and Andy, like, "Hey dudes, I just found the Rich Mullins show on this old hard drive. Do you want it?" And they were like, "Yeah, we do." And he had the whole thing in multi-track, so you could mix it and fix it. There were a couple of, there were a couple of like forgotten lyrics and a couple missed notes. And so we spent the last 2 years. Ben Shive did all the work and did amazing work. And he would kind of gather us at, I would go over to his studio occasionally, and I missed a couple of lyrics of one I just thought for 25 years that the lyric was this, and it turns out it was that, And so I re-sang it to just fix that one line. But we didn't touch any of the guitars or any of the pianos. We had to redo the strings because they didn't record. You can just hear the drums in them, and they wouldn't sound good. And then we just fixed like forgotten lyrics, and then mixed it. It sounds awesome. So if it comes out in October 20 something.
Okay.
Sorry, I just talked.
No, that's okay. No, I mean, I'm as interested in it's the only time on the crowdfunding, crowdfunder that I didn't even have to think twice about it. Like, you're doing that? Yeah.
And I love that they did no rewards. It's just you can get the download or the vinyl.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
We're not going to try to upsell you on a t-shirt or handwritten. Nope. It's just, this is all.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sold itself. I was like, love that album. And love that. You know, I missed even knowing that concert was available to go to. I would have driven up from where I live.
Well, I can't wait for people to hear it. Yeah, it's so great.
Looking forward to that.
And you just hear the crowd like lose their minds to hear these songs come alive.
Yeah.
So fun. So yeah, I can't. Yeah. I'm so excited about it. But yeah, that was the concert poster for that night, and everybody signed it, and so that's, I just like having that on my wall.
Well, I like it. I would too. If I were you. So I noticed in the notes, real quick, on the book, How to Remember, that you had included the lyrics of a Rich Mullins song, "Hard to Get."
Yeah, yeah.
Which is one of my absolute favorite. I mean, talk about a guttural prayer.
It's an amazing song.
Yeah, yeah. So.
Yeah, it's in a chapter. It's in a chapter about time, and how a lot of the old hymns often talk about time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a common theme that we are in a moment, mm-hmm. and God is in time, and that. And we don't typically sing about that in modern worship songs. We don't usually sing about our past, and we don't usually sing about our present. About the future. Modern worship songs are, for better or worse, and I think some of both, very much about this moment right now. God, you make me feel loved and safe now. But we don't sing about, like the Psalms, God, you did this and you did that and you did this and you did that. And there's a, you know, and then like the old hymns of like the Great Depression or the, you know, the plantation era, you know, where there's a, in the great by and by, we're going to the, you know, the glory land, Shekinah, you know, like we don't sing about our future. Like we're very comfortable here. Mm-hmm. We don't need the future. We've got cable. We got, you know, we've got Wi-Fi and air conditioning and aspirin. We don't need, what do we need? Right. We're very focused on the present tense. There's a chapter about time, and but I quoted that song, that you who live in eternity hear the prayers of those of us who live in time, because that is a unbelievable line.
It's a great song. I'm looking forward to reading that chapter, reading that. I'm looking forward to your book. How can someone who maybe this is their first introduction to you, where do they go to find out more about the music, the book coming out?
You're so kind, Robert. I've got a website, andrewosenga.com. It's a weird Dutch name, Osenga. If you put that in Amazon, you'll find the book, because there's only one Osenga in the internet, really. And then you can pre-order the book right now. And then, you know, I'm on YouTube and Substack and Spotify.
Okay.
So I try to write about every week on Substack, and then tons of music on Spotify and Amazon, Apple, all those things.
Okay.
Anchor Hymns is up there as well. This community I lead of modern songwriter, hymn writers.
Okay. So. And you got the Pivot coming out. So I'll include all of that.
That's a lot. Yeah.
But that's a phenomenal. That's as we were approaching this date, I was like, wow, he's got a lot going on. So I'm just flabbergasted, honored, grateful to spend this time. I've thoroughly enjoyed this conversation.
Oh, you're kind, Robert. Me too. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor.
You're welcome. You will be back. So
Would love
I
it.
yeah.